So what do you have there?
It's a gift from God.
Well, you don't sound very excited about it.
Well, actually, it's a dream. God gave it to me.
So what is it?
I don't know. I haven't opened it yet.
Well, so are you going to open it or what?
Oh, I don't think I can.
Well, of course you can. It's not exactly duct taped or chained.
I don't mean that. I mean, what if I open it and I don't like it? What if I open God's dream for me and I don't want it? It's not like I can exchange it.
So how are you going to know unless you open it?
Actually, this isn't the first one of these I've gotten. I had one before, and I did take a little look, a little peek.
So?
Oh, it was very cool.
Yeah?
Incredible. Amazing and exciting.
So what did you do with that?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Well, what would you expect me to do? I can't be trusted with something like that. I'd just goof it up.
Oh, it'd be a huge mess. Well, did you ever think of sharing it with other people and maybe getting some help?
Yeah, that's an idea. They'd just laugh at me. It's not something I can do. It'd just end up such a big joke.
Yeah, well, I suppose that could happen. But what if people actually wanted to help you?
Okay, if they actually wanted to help, that size of a dream, it's too big for me to commit. I can't put any extra energy towards it.
So your big dream is to do nothing.
Well, no, I didn't do nothing last time. I wrapped it back up, and I put it away for later.
So God gives you this big, amazing, awesome dream, and you shelve it.
See, that's the attitude.
What attitude?
The attitude that makes me think I did something wrong with the last dream. So I'm not going to open this one because I could do something wrong again. If God gave me such a cool dream last time, how could this one be any better?
So you're going to do nothing with that one, too?
Well, I didn't say do nothing. I'll wrap it back up, put it someplace with the others. Then someday when
I can't believe you. You get these great dreams and you just don't do anything.
What do you do with yours?
Well, not everybody gets these amazing gift-wrapped dreams from God. In fact, I don't think I've ever gotten one myself.
But, you know, you do what you want with yours. But it says...
We're going to hear now from the Gospel of John, the first chapter, the first 9 verses. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him, not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life. And the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light, so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. On Christmas Eve, every person who came to worship here was given a small candle, symbolic of the light that each of us personally carries out into the world. That night, just a few days ago, Monday night, all the lights shone brightly, and we knew the joy of Christ's birth and the joy of each other's company. However, past experience has taught us that as we leave the manger in Bethlehem, as we move out from the day of feasting and celebration, as we go back to our routines, our homes, our daily lives, it's not always easy to keep that little flame burning steadily. Many of our experiences, in fact, far from being fuel for the fire, seem to be more the nature of cold water, which dampens or extinguishes. We have real concerns about money and security. We have struggles with our health. We know grief and loss and betrayal. We have high hopes as the new year begins. And yet we also see that our world is wounded by violence and greed. We sometimes feel powerless as problems seem to grow larger and more threatening. buffeted by these winds, our inner light often seems to be in danger of getting blown out. Yet, we do not lose hope. The message of Christmas is, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. Jesus, after all, the bright and blazing light for all people, was born into impoverished circumstances and very dangerous times. His family, fearing for his life, fled to another country and became refugees. And yet the light was not extinguished. I knew a woman once whose name was Kathleen. Her health, mental and physical, was poor, and she had no place to live. I first met her when she showed up in the apartment building where I lived one Christmas Eve, having seen a sign that said, "We're having an open house, everyone welcome." The sign actually had been intended for other students at the school, but Kathleen, wandering the neighborhood, saw it and assumed that she was included in the word "everyone." She came in and happily joined the conversation. Amazing, I thought, that in spite of everything that she endures on a daily basis, her light still shines. Some years ago, I clipped a magazine article written by a man in prison. This man had been studying theology with a group of other prisoners, and this article he wrote for the magazine expressed some frustration that theology professors and religious authors were not answering any of the letters that the prisoners had written to them, letters filled with honest inquiries and requests for dialogue. Amazing that this man, isolated from society and being told over and over again that he doesn't matter, and yet his light shines so brightly that he devotes himself to studying and writing and makes repeated efforts to establish communication with those he regards as fellow travelers. Robert Fulghum, in one of his books, includes a story about a man with Alzheimer's whose favorite thing to do is celebrate Christmas. It seems that several times a year, as the family would be gathered around the kitchen table eating breakfast, this man would come downstairs and exclaim, "Merry Christmas!" And the family would respond. They would all jump up, run to the cupboards, pull out the boxes full of Christmas decorations, and begin to celebrate. Amazing that in the midst of tragedy, the light shines and brings joy. If Mary and Joseph, if Kathleen, if prisoners of body or mind can protect and preserve the light, then perhaps so can we. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. I'd like to read you the testimony of a parent. A number of years ago, Christmas Eve came to our house full of darkness and fear. My teenage daughter was out, as she was every night. She was having all kinds of struggles with alcohol and drugs. I lost track of the number of suicide attempts. Somewhere in the midst of all that, I had joined Al-Anon, and in that community, I found the courage to tell my story and express my fears. But even though I was very much a church person, I was not able to turn my problem over to a higher power the way Al-Anon was suggesting that I do. On that Christmas Eve, in absolute despair, I literally fell down on my knees and yelled, "God help me." And I was bathed with a light, with a warmth, with a confidence that I have never had words to describe. My daughter still had more times of struggle and despair, but I was able to be strong for her during those few moments when she was home. She's now an adult, working with abused children, and a very fine person, and we have a good relationship. And that Christmas Eve moment, that light, that warmth, that strength has been with me ever since. I suspect that if Jesus had a birthday cake, the candles would be that kind that you can't actually succeed in blowing out. You puff and they go out for a moment and then they come sparkling back on again. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. The grace of God can keep the light of hope burning, even in us. Now, about that Native American creation story from the Pacific Northwest. The story of the seagull reveals that the winds of hard times and the waves of adversity are not the only threats to the light given to us by God. The other danger is that of our own attitude. If we, out of selfishness or greed, try to keep the light or the gifts that God has given us to ourselves, we create hardships for others and we become alienated from our community. Our light does no good if we, out of fear or extreme protectiveness or anxiety about what might happen, try to hide it. Thankfully, the grace of God has many ways of working. Sometimes it's actually through pain that we're able to change and grow and learn to share our gifts with the world. Sometimes it is even through pain that we are taught to see ourselves as one among many children of God and taught that the gifts given to us are meant for the good of all. Jane Herring can clearly remember the first manifestation of her love of writing. She was a very young child who looked around one day to find something to write with and a scrap of paper in her mother's kitchen. She took these items outside to the backyard and set herself up at the picnic table. Settling down on the bench, she did her very best to imitate the looping and the dotting and the crossing of her mother's handwriting. The internal satisfaction that she received from these efforts was pure joy. And then she took the paper to her mother. "Read the story I wrote," she said. Her mother looked down at the marks that had been made on that page, and her expression became sort of baffled. "Well, it doesn't say anything, dear," was the announcement from Jane's mother. "Go wash up for dinner." Though it easily could have been so, this was not the day that Jane chose to squelch her gift. That came later, as she tried to write. She grew up and tried to write what she thought she could sell, something that would help her to earn a living. And she began to wish that she could be like other writers that she admired and she thought were far superior to what she was able to produce. And then she began to think that really her life did not contain the right elements to sharpen her creative edge. And so she quit writing. She found a job that paid the bills. She bought a house. She took up hobbies that allowed her some creative outlet, but not much. The years went by, and her hopes felt battered. Jane cannot point to a specific incident that transformed her hardened, cynical attitude and returned her to the original joy of freely expressing herself in writing. But key to the process, she says, key to the process was finding a community of believers who were passionate and heedless in their love of God and who also sought justice and reconciliation in this world full of hungry, displaced, and oppressed people. She reports discovering more and more artists and writers who live their creative life, and the same could be said for scientists and engineers and doctors and any number of pursuits that human beings can find. In this case, she's an artist, and so what she found was a community of artists and writers who live their creative life as a way of expressing their devotion to God. Using their gifts became for them a form of offering to God. She tends to think of it as surrendering her art to God in order to be formed in God's will. Somehow, this writing process for her helps her connect her human heart's desire to the heart of Jesus Christ. She senses that God is molding and shaping her as she uses her gift of writing, and she no longer doubts that her love of writing is, in fact, a gift from God. Writing strengthens her focus and her connection to God's gracious and great love. Gifts come in many shapes and sizes, of course, and in many varieties, as Paul said so memorably when he wrote to the community of believers in Corinth. And these words, I think, have been preserved because it's important for all of us to understand these things. This is 1 Corinthians chapter 12. "Now concerning spiritual gifts, brothers and sisters, I do not want you to be uninformed. There are varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are varieties of services, but the same Lord. And there are varieties of activities, but it is the same God who activates all of them in everyone. To each is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good." Our challenge is to not let ourselves get caught in the grip of attitudes that prevent us from releasing, sharing, and fully enjoying our gifts. We can be glad when God uses those around us, the members of our community, to encourage and support the unfolding of our gifts, or even to jab us in the foot until we are forced to let our light shine forth. Here's a story about a wild dream that gives me hope that the world will yet wake up to the wonderful things that God is continually trying to do among us. I first noticed this story when my daughter Christina was home at Thanksgiving time. She joined me one morning at the breakfast table while I was reading the newspaper. I still actually, a few days a week, read the print version of the newspaper. So she picked up the front page, and within moments, she had thrown it back down on the table in disgust. "I can't stand to read about all the idiotic and horrible things going on in the world," she announced. So I flipped over that folded paper, and there was a picture of a billboard with plants growing out of it. "Try this," I suggested. "Maybe if you read this, it will make you feel better." The picture represented the vision of a Los Angeles artist who wants to start creating floating bamboo gardens in place of the assaultive advertising, which is the traditional purpose of billboards. He calls the project Urban Air, imagining that in addition to being a thing of beauty, these bamboo plants in their narrow, elevated gardens will also help to clean the air that we breathe and to make it a little bit cooler and fresher. Through a website called Kickstarter, Stephen Glassman has raised the $100,000 necessary to build a prototype and obtain all of the permits you might imagine would be required of anyone who tries to think outside the usual limits. Discovering that so many people were inspired by and willing to contribute to the realization of his dream caused Stephen to say this: "I feel a kind of freedom in the world in a more powerful, creative way. It feels like a whole new territory. I mean, the sky's the limit, literally. What's so great is that every contribution given was a vote for something green and beautiful and ridiculous in the world." When the fundraising goal was reached, one of the supportive donors wrote, "I'm so glad this is happening. I know this is your project, but it feels like my project too." Not many hours from now, a new year will begin. Perhaps this is the moment to decide to support one another in releasing our gifts and living our dreams, so that there might be ever more of God's healing and loving light in our world. Gracious and eternal God, as we sing the words reminding us of the light that radiates from your face toward us, light full of love and mercy and hope and strength, we pray that we might receive this gift of light in such a way that it strengthens us not just for Christmas Day or the week after Christmas, but the whole year that is to come. That we might, through this light, begin to live in freedom and confidence and joy, understanding that you have placed within each of us gifts that contribute to the health and well-being of the world. Save us and prevent us, O Lord, from getting stuck in attitudes of protectiveness or fearfulness or excessive caution. But let us rather take as our image children rushing down to the tree on Christmas morning to excitedly open their gifts and see what might be inside. Your generosity is unbounded, and so it inspires us to pray once again together the prayer that Jesus taught us. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen.